over the weekend, and he needed a ride back to the ferry, and it's about a 20-minute drive, and all the other guys were like, well, I'd rather go play disc golf. And I was like, okay, well, I'll volunteer. I'll go drive. And so I drove him to the ferry and got to have a more extended chat and conversation all the way there. I dropped him off. And after the weekend, I was like, wow, I'm really glad I did that, because it was a much healthier way to go about interacting with this guy who at first I was just wanted to ignore. And, you know, there's plenty of other guys to interact with on the retreat. I could have just sort of left them alone and thought poorly of them again, but I decided not to. And we all have relationships and connections in our life like this that are, you know, have either just some gentle friction around them, or they have, you know, maybe some more intensity to them, and they create more anger or angst for us. And sometimes they're situated in the home or extended family type relationships, or some of them that are more because of our work or volunteer type situation. The Apostle Paul wrote a text in Colossians. We've been preaching through Colossians, and it's a very earthy text. He addresses how the gospel, how the love of Jesus is to affect relationships within the home and within our workplace. And we're going to take a look at that. But, you know, there's people for all of us that we'd maybe rather not be around, if we're honest about it. There's people that we work with or volunteer with that we hope would move away or quit. There's probably seasons of parenting where we go, can't wait to be an empty nester, right? There's times when you'd rather, you know, I told one parent recently, like, they're going through some stuff, and I was like, you know what? Before sin entered the world, there's no such thing as teenagers. They were after the fall of man. That's what happened. Yeah. And sometimes there's family members that we wish would move away, or we could move away from, or, you know, but we can't choose that. And often when we have these dreams of things, it doesn't create too much freedom or peace for us. It actually creates more frustration and anger or worry or distress. So we're going to take a look at two different areas that Paul addresses to the Colossian church. You know, he talks about if you're a practicing Christian, how does it affect your home life? And then he talks about, okay, how does it affect your work life? Or maybe you don't work your volunteer life or your public life. The first one comes from the home. He says this. There we go. It says, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting for those who belong to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and never treat them harshly. Children, always obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not aggravate your children, or they will become discouraged. Now, this is parts of this passage are well known and well talked about and well debated. And because it is, you know, a somewhat a contentious passage in our Western culture and in a first century, in a first world country. But what I'd like to draw out here before we even touch on maybe that type of stuff is that in the first century here, it's what Paul is doing is really impressive, because he's raising the bar in terms of, if you're a Christian household, this is how you're called to interact. And how he's raising the bar is the fact that in this patriarchal society, the man or the husband or the father had all the power, had all the rights, right? Like, he could do what he wanted with his family, he could do what he wanted with his wife, what he wanted with his kids. The kids and the wife did not have a say or a role to play necessarily, but to be obedient to the father. Whereas here, in this passage that Paul's talking about, he actually addresses males twice with direction. Husbands, love your wives. Fathers, do not aggravate your children. Because, and I think probably because guys need a little bit more direction, a little bit more help, but he's addressing them, and then he's addressing the wives and the children as well. He's calling them into a place, like, this is the part you play in the family, this is the role you play in the family, there's submit, there's obey, there's love, there's this beautiful picture going on. Like, if you're a Christian household, if you're a Christ-honoring house, and you're a follower of Christ, this is how you are to interact in your home. It's supposed to impact not only how you interact with God, but how you interact in your home life. And it's a very difficult thing to do. I acknowledge that family is messy. You know, you throw in a couple of divorces, or you throw in a couple step-siblings or half-siblings or extended family that ostracized themselves from the family, something like that. To then take this text and just superimpose it onto your family situation can be somewhat, I don't want it to put like a big guilt burden on you, but to go like, okay, no, this is the ideal. You know, submitting to the husbands, loving your wives, and it says in Ephesians, as Christ loved the church, you know, called to lay down your life for them. Ideally, children will obey. Teenagers, we know they won't, you know. Fathers, do not aggravate your children unless they become discouraged. Like, it's important how parents treat their kids, right? We all know those things. It's all, we're all deeply aware of that. But they're all very difficult too. This is the lifelong ideal that we live in a process toward, in terms of how we interact as a family. And these things like submitting, loving, obeying, these are all things that we see in the character of Jesus, in the life of Jesus, in how he lived. When he loved in action, when he was coming into one's place, there was a man named Zacchaeus who wanted to see him. Zacchaeus was very short, so he climbed a tree and was watching Jesus enter, and Jesus went up to him and said, I want to go to your house and meet with you. And the reason why this was a shock to some people was that Zacchaeus was not well-liked, he was intimate, he was known for stealing money. He was a tax collector, so he just stole money for a living. But Jesus goes and says, I want to eat with you, I want to befriend you. So Jesus would cost him his time and his energy. He would love with sacrifice. And people muttered and they were angry about him going to eat with Zacchaeus. They said, he's gone to eat at the guest, be the guest of a sinner. And there was we see the submission in the life of Jesus as well, where, you know, on the night of Jesus' betrayal, he knows he's going to be arrested, he knows he's going to be beaten, he knows he's going to be crucified, an excruciating death on the cross for our sin and for our brokenness. Jesus is praying in the garden, and he's in anguish. Many of us are very familiar with the text, and there's this famous line that Jesus says, my Father, if it is possible, he prays, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. This beautiful submission that Jesus has to the Father. So things like submitting, loving, obeying, these are things that we see in the life of Jesus that he's calling us to model and to enter into. And this is not stuff that we can do on our own strength. I mean, probably all of us have tried to be more loving and more patient and more kind or more obedient. And it's not something you can just grit your teeth and bear down and then you've got to figure it out for the rest of your life. It is what I think it is that, as our mission statement says, that it's something that we embrace Christ's love, and then out of that we're able to extend it. It's this relationship of receiving more and being filled with more of God's presence and his spirit. And it's out of that comes the ability to walk it out. There's this great quote I read online that says this, the world says I'll love you if, and God says I'll love you even if. Even if you falter, even if you walk away, even if you have doubts, even if you struggle with your faith, or even if you just outright reject God for a while and you want to come back to him, God says I'll love you even if. The passage that we just read says it's moving up husbands and wives and children in a direction of going, I'll love you, I'll serve you, I'll submit to you even if. And it's a very hard ideal to walk out, and I acknowledge that right off the bat, as I have earlier today. It's just that this is what God is calling us in the direction of, that I'll love you even if. I want to take a look at some of the work stuff, the work situation that Paul addresses now. Now, he uses the phrase masters and slaves, that's what it was, so just understand mentally as employer, employee, okay? And see what he says there. So, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything you do. Try to please them all the time, not just when they are watching you. Serve them sincerely because of your reverent fear of the Lord. Work willingly at whatever you do, as though you are working for the Lord rather than for people. He goes on, he says this. Remember that the Lord will give you an inheritance as your reward, that the master you're serving is Christ. But if you do wrong, you'll be paid back for the wrong you have done, for God has no favorites. Masters, be just and fair to your slaves. Remember that you also have a master in heaven. So just like in the first century, the masters were the ones who were supposed to have all the power and say, Paul then, as if it's a Christian household or a Christian workplace, he raises his bar and goes, okay, slaves have a very important role to play in terms of how they serve and how they work and how honorable they are. And so the masters, you're called to be accountable as well. You're called to be just and fair, just as you have a master in heaven. So the Christian gospel raises the standard in terms of how people interact, how they love, and how they work with one another. We see this in Jesus when how he interacted with his disciples. He would say, okay, I want you to give him commands to go and preach the good news. I want you to go two by two, go to towns and preach and perform miracles in my name. So he'd give them direction, give them guidance, he'd command them, this is a master would. But then he'd also serve them as a servant. As we know in the Gospel of John, right at the Last Supper,
he got down to the, like 12 guys' dirty feet and washed them. And he said, you know, like, this is the example I'm setting for you. So he both ends our master and our servant in that way.
How we go about our work really can display God's love. We all know that, we're all aware of that. I had a friend tell me a story of a church out in Fraser Valley where they wanted, unlike ourselves, they wanted to do some renovations. They wanted to do some additions to their church, add things, just like we would like to add some things to our church building. And they were undergoing some bids for the construction, getting different companies to come bring different bids in, to the church for it. And this one guy brought up bid, and he goes, okay, this is my quote, this is my timeline, and, and by the way, if it is part of the decision factor, I'm also a practicing Christian. And the board said, okay, thanks, we'll consider it, right? And then they talked about it. They actually really liked his bid and liked his quote. So the board representative went back to the construction company owner, said, hey, we would like to go with your company, we like your quote, we like the timeline you have on it. And then he said, kind of facetiously, he said, you know, but in terms of your faith, how about we hire you, you do the work, then we'll decide if you're a Christian. Right? You know, because our work can display God's love, our integrity, our honorability, you know, those types of things of whether we are living out the gospel in our day-to-day home life and work life or volunteer life. It does play a factor. So we are called to submit, love, serve, and work with each other from our love for Jesus. It's not that, okay, I'm a Christian and it doesn't impact my home life or it doesn't impact my work life. It's now spreading and extending through all of my interactions and all of my connections. And once again, we cannot do this on our own strength. This isn't something that, like, it's a charge of, okay, we just got to try harder and we'll get it done. It's like, no. We have to continually receive God's love, God's power. Like, for example, on a very personal level, there's no physical way I could stand up here and preach today over what we've gone through this past month unless it was for God's love and God's strength and God's power. There's no way I could stand up here and do this. It's a continual reliance on Him that He will give you the strength to do what you're called to do. As I said before, the world says, I'll love you if, and God says, I'll love you even if. And that is the direction He's calling us, and that is the direction that we are all moving towards with our relationship. God will love you even if anything happens to your life, you feel like it will draw you away. No, God will love you and still pursue you. And He's calling us in that direction with how we interact at home, how we interact at work, and beyond. But to rely on God's strength to do that, it requires some humility, right? It requires some ability and awareness to sit down with God and communicate with Him and go, okay, I need more of your presence. I need more of your love. I need more of your strength in this relationship because I don't want to engage with this person at all. There's this author and management expert, Ken Blanchard. He said this around humility, and I really like it. He said, humility does not mean you think less of yourself. It means about you think about yourself less. Humility does not mean you think less of yourself. It means you think about yourself less. When I'm working through a relationship that has friction, that has tension, that is difficult, if I just think about my own ability to engage in it, it's very minimal. But if I now think about myself less and think more about what God would have to say about the relationship, how He sees it, how He sees me, how He can empower me to step out in love, submit, or to obey in the midst of it, then it's a much more powerful perspective. And it's humility to ask God for that help. We see most in the character and the life of Jesus. I want to close with a reading from Philippians 2 about how Christ interacted with God the Father, and then Pastor Reed is going to lead us in partaking of communion. The scripture says this: though He was with God, He did not think equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, He gave up His divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross.
Therefore, God evaluated him to the place of highest honor and gave him the name above all names, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue declare that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.
Amen.